Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to your favorite podcast. This is realestateinvestormba.com. We created Real Estate Investor MBA to leverage the knowledge of giants through synthesizing and providing much needed information to all investors, from the veteran investor to the new and aspiring investor. At Real Estate Investor MBA, we plan to cover pertinent information head on with our expert guests, who we will interview on what they are doing and preparing for in the days and years ahead. We aim to create MBA quality curriculum topics and themes from the information garnered among our interviewed guests in order to bring world-class value to our fellow community of listeners. We truly believe that rising water raises all ships. And by sharing this leveraged knowledge, we can create a stronger online community, which translates to stronger local, regional, and national communities. Your hosts are Jeremy Moyer, who is a veteran real estate investor and author of a new book called Are You Playing the Real Estate Game Blind? As well as Tejas Gosai, the owner of eXp Realty, the Tejas Gosai team, and also co-manager in a newly formed Regulation D private equity fund called the Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund. Now let's get to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to your favorite real estate podcast. This is Real Estate Investor MBA. I am your host, Tejas Gosai, actually co-host. There's my partner, Jeremy Moyer. And welcome. First thing we always do is say thank you to everybody who listens, who engages, and has been emailing us. We greatly appreciate it. We have some good comments on Facebook, and just generally appreciate everybody giving us the opportunity to share what our topics are every week. And of course, we love the growth in the Lehigh Valley. We just had Mayor Sal Panto from Easton on our last podcast. Awesome interview if you want to hear about the developments that are happening there. And we have our website houses all of our podcasts. We're also on, thanks to Jeremy, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Google Podcasts. So with that, the hardest thing in the world to understand is the income tax. So just a funny way to start, today's podcast is about tax and real estate. So Jeremy, with that, please welcome our guest.
Absolutely. That's the best topic is about taxes, right? So I'm excited to announce our guest today. We have Manal Babaria. So Manal is president and founder of KB Tax Advisors CPAs. It's an industry-leading full-service tax and accounting advisory firm servicing clients remotely throughout the United States. Manal specializes in serving small businesses' needs through customized, innovative, and tax strategies. She's a leader in her field, having received extensive training in the tax code to become one of only 700 designated certified tax coaches in the United States. Most accountants simply know how to file taxes correctly, but Manal specializes in value price tax strategies that identify loopholes, deductions, credits, saving her clients an average of $10,000 up to $175,000 in taxes every year. So with that, Manal, thank you so much for your time this afternoon and joining us.
That was quite a bit of an intro. I really appreciate, Jeremy. And thank you, Tejas, for inviting me on this podcast.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, full disclosure, I've worked with Manal, and Jeremy and I have attended some webinars on some topics. So this is great because Manal has helped a lot of my clients in the past, and tax is like the hairiest subject. But when you have the right experts, it can be a fun, I will say, game. It's a game, right? What we're really trying to do is make sure we have legacy and generational wealth in real estate. And one of the ways to maintain that is by making sure that you utilize the tax code to be beneficial for you. And there's nothing wrong with that. So let's get into it. Sorry, Jeremy, Manal, pumped.
Let's start off with just telling the listeners a little bit more about yourself, you know, how you got started as a CPA, and go from there.
Yeah, sure. Well, growing up, I had always seen my dad suffering in his both the businesses. He was as well a real estate agent, and he had another business. And my dad was picturizing a role for his CPA to perform in his business. His accountants never played that role. And just like my dad, I've seen many other businesses, they are looking for that more of the advisory role from their accountants. And, you know, they rely on their accountants like gods, you know, they're like, whatever my accountant says goes, I don't know, whatever accountant said, I did it. So we're like, you know, that the business owner community has been greatly underserved. I felt there is a need, and, you know, we just developed those skills, getting training from the experts in the country on how can we utilize the same tax strategies that the wealthiest in the country are utilizing to reduce their taxes. And that's where we founded KB Tax Advisor CPAs as our family mission. And my both the sisters, they joined me in this journey. So in this practice, we help our clients with business and tax guidance to help them generate wealth and build lasting legacy for their families and beyond.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, to what you just said, like, you know, clients are probably looking at you for advice, advisors on tax, not just completing tax returns, right? And I remember when you said that, I was just envisioning the Rich Dad Poor Dad book, where, you know, Robert Kiyosaki talks about you need your advisors around you to, you know, advise you on what to do with strategies and whatnot. And, you know, I think that's, you're right. I think that is underserved in the marketplace, you know, for the small business owner, how to get that advice and not just to the wealthiest clients. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
And your clients are, I mean, I know you're based in Lehigh Valley. We're based in Lehigh Valley, but I know you have a lot of clients that are predominantly not from the Valley. All over the country, and that's kind of become your niche. And you know, people think you have to switch tax advisors, or actually not advisors, like you have to switch the folks who do your tax returns or your CPAs. You actually work in conjunction with them, which is how you're able to function.
Yeah, we work in conjunction with them if they have a good accountant. If they don't have a good accountant, we become their de facto accounting department. So, you know, it's good that CPA, AICPA has a reciprocity agreement with most states, and we are allowed to practice throughout the country. So that's pretty good.
That's awesome.
Very interesting. So, you know, prior to the interview, you and I were going back and forth, you know, via email on a lot of different topics. There's so many to choose from. You know, to go through this episode, we only have so much time. You know, if you're up for it, I know we were discussing potentially doing like even a mini series just to cover the multitude of topics that there's out there. But I want to start off with, you know, what are some commonly overlooked deductions or even those tax strategies that you see landlords, you know, real estate investors that hold property long term, not utilizing or taking advantage of, you know, when you first meet them and you look through their past returns?
Well, that's a very wide question. Sure. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
But most commonly overlooked expenses, you know, in case of the real estate, you know, industry is travel expenses, which is oftentimes very underlooked by many people. I would say that not maximizing on depreciation deductions. You know, that's kind of a big deal because, you know, if you are depreciating that commercial real estate or residential real estate over 27 or 39 years, you're not getting maximum deduction in the earlier years when you don't have enough of cash flow, especially when the present value of money is very high right now versus in future. So that kind of is a big thing. With the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, one of the things that we have noticed frequently, which is not grouping the real estate properties in a right way. So if it is not grouped in a correct way, you are kind of missing out on passive loss, you know, deduction. So
can you say more specifically grouped? Like, what does that mean, grouped?
Yes. So the way... When we say grouping, what I mean by grouping the real estate properties either in a property bucket or activities bucket or entity level, or it could be an election or change that can be done year over year, or it could be effective on sale. You know, it could be done in at multiple phases. But when you're grouping a couple of properties together, like say, for example, you have one, three properties in a particular city. One of them is generating good profits. The other two are making losses. If those three properties are grouped together for that particular city, the losses from those two properties will be offsetting your capital gain on the other one, or whatever your net profit is at the other property. So your passive losses and passive income grouping. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yep.
Which many accountants, you know, they kind of miss this. And for that, you don't have to be a real estate professional. That can be done even without being a real estate professional. And this grouping can be done by property level, can be done by activities level, or can be even done by entity level and can be changed every year.
Awesome.
So the, you know, when we were talking before, again, through email, we were talking about entity structures. You know, you comment, at least what I commonly hear is, an LLC with, partnership ownership is typically the better way to hold real estate. You know, do you agree with that? Do you disagree with that? Does it really depend on this, you know, the type of asset, you know, office building, commercial, large multifamily? Like, does the type of asset depend on what type of ownership structure from a tax perspective?
I still agree that the LLC is the best structure for the real estate. If there is a multi-member entity, my first choice would be partnership, not an S-corp. And there is a reason behind it. Most of the time with the real estate investment, you know, because you get high depreciation deduction, there is a loss in tax terms, if I can say it that way. In reality, it's not a loss, but in terms of taxes, it's a loss. Having losses on the S-corporation side diminishes your stock basis on the for the S-corp shareholder owners, which kind of puts restrictions. If you were to take out some money as distributions or anything like that, you will be paying capital gains taxes on that. So just to avoid that capital gains tax issue and not having to worry about a limited shareholder basis, I definitely recommend partnership or an LLC over the S-corp. Because S-corp with the limited shareholder basis, if you were to take out any distributions, you're paying capital gains tax. Mm. So that's kind of an issue on that side.
Sure. That it's already getting complicated, and it's been like so
I'm like I'm just shaking my head like I understand. Yeah.
So what I mean, if I break it down in a simple layman's language, with the S corp, you can only deduct your distribution without paying any taxes as long as you have enough of basis in the S corp. And your basis is calculated based on how much money you invested in the business, how much money you gave as a loan and stuff like that, and what was the net profit at the end of the year. And if your real estate property is generating losses every year, it reduces your basis every year.
Yeah. And that's that the a lot of the folks that you're dealing with, I mean, doctors, lawyers, high net worth individuals that typically but it really makes sense for them to have passive investments and or active investments that they can use. And that's one of the reasons doctors own real estate. That's my father's a physician, and you know, I've grown up with the Indian immigrant, you know, doctor, lawyer, hotel owner, gas station, convenience store. There's purpose. There's reasoning behind why this happens. I forgot what my question was going to be, but just comment on that, right? Like there's a need. I don't know if you want to add to it.
Just to add to that, when you mentioned about doctors, chiropractors, you know, that industry, I have dealt with them a lot. And, you know, that's kind of our specialty as well. One of the chiropractor, just giving you out an example, you know, chiropractors, they usually have some supplements that they sell in the business. And this small practices, you know, dentist, chiropractor, physicians, they own the property. They operate their practice from the same property. And they may have multiple other properties, you know, around that same shopping plaza, whatever you call it, or maybe some other real estate, you know, investment. So one of the strategy that we did, you know, this particular chiropractor, he had his main office on the first ground, you know, and then first floor, and then his another part of his practice on the second floor. We just did a minor change. The supplements that he was selling, we created another entity and shifted that function of the business in a separate entity, shifted on the second floor of the building. Mm-hmm. What it did, real estate property itself had losses every year. And because of the QBI deduction restrictions, he was not allowed, you know, higher QBI deduction at the business level, and those losses were unutilized. So when we shifted that sale of supplements onto the second floor, which was managed by other employees, not himself, creating that part of the business as passive activity. Mm-hmm. So profits of that supplement sale business would offset real estate losses.
And before, it was counted as in, as him actively being in the business. Which...
So it was not utilized.
Sure.
So passive losses, we take it as the asset. Or any kind of tax loss, we consider it as an asset.
Awesome.
To reduce your tax liability.
Are you, like, and you know, that's a good example of folks that own their own real estate. How about, you know, the high net worth individuals that are buying multifamilies and, you know, hotels and different investment vehicles? Have you worked with any, you know, like hotel owners or folks in that industry to help them with their, you know, tax liability, passive income wise?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we do have a huge hotel industry as our clientele. The hospitality industry, you know, it's kind of a big thing for us. And I have many clients who own multiple hotels, whether we say 3 hotels, 6 hotels, 18 hotels, 50 hotels. And oftentimes they buy a hotel and sell it. Within a few years, they will buy one property, you know, make it a profitable business, run it for a few years, and then sell it. Mm-hmm. And they will have a huge capital gain. So we have worked on that with many of those clients as well, where I have one of my clients in California, and she sold a hotel for $2.5 million, which was built by her parents in 1980s, which means by this time, that hotel was fully depreciated. Mm-hmm. And that full $2.5 million was going to be a capital gains tax. She was based out in California, which means taxed at the highest rate, you know, 37% something she was coming out to be when we calculate the taxes. So out of that $2.5 million deal, you're looking to pay almost $1 million in capital gains taxes.
That's crazy.
So we devised a tax strategy for her, which eliminated almost 100% of their capital gains tax.
Wow.
Not just that, on top of it, she will get a charitable contribution for the first year and 5 year carrying forward. So altogether, 6 years of charitable contribution and not paying any capital gains taxes at all.
It's amazing. That's amazing. Awesome. What, well, I don't know if you can share your trade secrets, but.
Yeah, well, so here, that is a kind of a very complicated tax strategy. Let me put it that way. And it was kind of a family endowment program. And, you know, we have other CPAs, tax attorney, everyone involved in this strategy. And any tax strategy I recommend my client is always backed by thorough research. It is backed by IRS tax section codes, court cases, you know, publications, stuff like that. And I kind of like to give written tax strategies to my clients, nothing off the air.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Just a few minutes ago, you mentioned QBI. Do you mind kind of going a little deeper into what that is and who it's applicable for and the benefits of it?
Yeah, sure. The QBI is Qualified Business Income Deduction. Mm-hmm. It on your 1040, if you're looking at your 1040, you're looking right below standard or itemized deduction line item. Mm-hmm. And it's with the S Corp partnership LLCs, it's kind of one of the big deductions. Let me put it that way. C corporation owners, they don't qualify for this, but there are certain income restrictions. So when Tejas was mentioning about physicians, doctors, chiropractors, those people, they kind of make a lot of money, which is a good thing. But because their income is higher, they lose out on QBI deduction, that criteria, because it has to be below $360,000 in income, then only you get QBI deduction. Mm-hmm. Now, if it is planned properly throughout the whole year, you could end up getting $50,000 to $70,000 in QBI deduction very easily. Mm-hmm. If it is planned ahead of the time, it could be even more. But if you fail to plan, you could end up with zero QBI deduction. So that's something. We kind of look into throughout the whole year, how can we maximize that? Before you reach up to that threshold, we kind of try to, look into different strategies. How can we maximize your QBI deduction?
Is that applicable to active income earners like chiropractors, attorneys, accountants, whatnot, or the small business owner? Or is that also applicable to real estate investors that hold real estate passively?
So it's available to all active businesses, whether it's real estate investors or, doctors, chiropractors, accountants. If at all, in fact, doctors, chiropractors, accountants have more restrictions because of the, specified service businesses, where reputation of the business is based on the reputation of like myself in my practice. Where I'm using myself as brand ambassador and kind of doing those, business. It's my business reputation is based on me. So I have some restrictions. Mm-hmm. But for the other businesses, they may not have that restrictions. So it depends. It's available to everyone. It's based on the entity structure, not based on, passive, not passive.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying that.
Yeah. Jeremy, you have anything else?
I was going to ask if you could give just another example of, a client that you helped out. Let's say real estate specific. You looked at their tax return prior years and you're like, oh, you didn't do this, that, or this. We could do this, going forward, just to kind of give an example, another one for the listeners. Yeah.
So I would say, traveling expenses before you're looking for the property, that's absolutely a thing. Even though it's a small, it could add up over time. The other big thing is, away from home traveling expenses, which is a big thing, where you are going to a different state, looking for different properties, maybe looking, exploring some opportunities or attending some seminar conferences like that. Combine that with a family vacation as well. For a couple of days, and I think it opens up door for more deductions. That kind of one thing, many people forget about it. What else? The loss carry forward, that's one of the things. Depreciation, which I mentioned earlier, that's of course one of the things. Meals and entertainment. With this year, with the 100% of the meals deduction, that's kind of one of the very good deduction available. And right now, with this situation, that we are going through the pandemic, if you have any tenants who are not paying you rent on a timely basis, helping your tenants with the renter's assistance, that could be a big deal. Mm-hmm. At least you get paid renter's assistance in time, which is a big deal too. So those are kind of small thing. Another thing I would recommend, home office deduction.
Yes, even if I guess you're right, because if you're a real estate investor, you need a place to put your stuff.
Yeah. at least you are sitting down once in a while and kind of compiling up all your records for giving it out to your accountant or, you know, those kind of things. So that is definitely, you know, you can allocate a certain portion of your home office, which is regularly and consistently used for business use, sure, and deduct those expenses. Make your home as an administrative office, and any mileages from your personal house to your rental property is all business deductible expenses.
That's awesome.
Very good. So this is kind of a spur of the moment type of thing. I know we mentioned at the beginning about having you come back on to discuss some other topics. I think, and Tejas and I were talking about this before, I think discussing how high income earners could take advantage of investing passively through, you know, like private equity funds or syndications, and, you know, if the entity and the structure of the deal is structured correctly, what the tax benefits could be. I think kind of getting into some of the details surrounding stuff like that, I think could be very beneficial to some of the listeners, to the operators that are providing that service to investors, and then also to investors that have all this income and they're trying to save some money on taxes.
Yeah. Just to add a little bit on that, if I can, you know, that FVP strategy I was talking about earlier, with that particular strategy, the money that you save on taxes, that cash flow is easily available to invest in the private equity fund, which otherwise would have been lost. So that's something I was talking with Tejas on the backside for his clients too.
Yeah, I'll jump in with this. You know, FVP discussion has taken like months to figure it out, but it's a very impressive vehicle that we as real estate agents are using with a lot of our high ticket clients. We have a lot of clients that are like, all right, I want 2 million, 3 million, but you know, I want to add 600,000 because I'm going to get hit with capital gains. Yeah. And then it's just impossible for a buyer to buy it, let alone a bank appraise it. So being able to deliver some clients to Meenal to explain, like, look, we can divert those capital gains. You can have a more reasonable purchase price. We can get it on the market or, you know, be able to sell it privately. So that's been neat. So we should talk about that later. We got a couple minutes left. Meenal, do you mind talking about some of the changes that are proposed or happening, you know, Trump, Biden stuff that is changing hands real quick?
Well, the real quick, which would impact many of our listeners, especially the high net worth individuals, is the capital gains taxes. Mm-hmm. If Biden's proposed tax plan is supposed to go in, then, you know, capital gains tax are going to go from 20% to 39.6%, which is almost double.
Woo!
Which is almost double. And if you have done 1031 exchanges before, it has worked before, it may not be as profitable now with this higher capital gains taxes. So that's definitely a huge deal breaker for the folks in the higher tax bracket that, you know, Biden is proposing to remove tax brackets, which is 32 to 35%. And I mean, 32 will remain as it is, 35 and 37% will go away. And then after 32, it will be 39%. So that is the higher tax bracket. So if you are someone who is paying at 35%, you're looking at 39% tax bracket. Even if it is a small change, in terms of dollars, it's a big change.
A big jump up.
Big jump up, absolutely.
Well, all right, we could probably go on for quite a while.
I can go on the tax plan for a couple of hours, unless you want me to go.
Yeah, no, here. This is Meenal and her company's website. So KB Tax Advisors, CPAs, super smart folks. They're hunting down the tax code and applying it and really doing the work to get the benefit to the clients, which is one of the reasons we work with her. But Jeremy, we're going to have her back on the program, I guess.
We will. Absolutely.
Yeah. As things kind of continue, but yeah, Meenal wanted to say thank you. This is Real Estate Investor MBA. Let me get the shot right. There we go. All right. And check us out next time. Meenal's program is on iTunes, podcasts, iHeart Radio, TuneIn. We're all over the place right now. Jeremy has done most of the work. So thank him. I get to be here every now and then. And we'll catch up with you guys soon.
Sounds good.
Cheers.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks, Mino.
Bye.